Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Why is Pakistan expelling Afghan refugees? Afghanistan says the move is illegal. Pakistan insists it's for security reasons. Is this politically motivated? And how will Taliban officials deal with it? I'm James Bayes, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyse and help define major global stories. We're going to dive deeper now into Pakistan's plan and its consequences with our panel today. In Islamabad, Niloufar Afridi Kazi, a social worker by trade who's also a public policy specialist. In Kabul, Faiz Zarland, professor of political science at Kabul University. He's also the chief executive of the Peace Development and Democracy Organization. And in Washington, D.C., Devon Cohn, the senior advocate for women and girls at Refugees International. Thank you all of you for joining us today. Let me start with you, Niloufar. I know you don't represent the Pakistan government, but explain to us, why is Pakistan kicking out all of these Afghans?
Thank you, James. This is a complex question, and the answer is not simple, and it can't be explained without looking at many aspects of it. But in short, there is a game being played and messaging between Islamabad, the government, and our security agencies, which manage this side of our foreign policy in particular, and the Taliban government. As you know, the Taliban government came into power, unfortunately, in Afghanistan with the assistance and the backing of the international community, and certainly a pivotal role by Islamabad. And now they have a problem in this relationship, primarily by the type of terrorists that the Taliban are supporting, which impact the security forces and, of course, the civilian populations, and creating insecurity on this side of our border. In the middle of this messaging and conflict, bilateral conflict, the most vulnerable are most affected. We have in Pakistan had Afghans, we call them now in modern language refugees, but they it's a symbiotic relationship between Afghans living on the west side and Balochistan and KP, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa populations. We are one people, we are all Afghans, so to speak, but in two countries. So it's a symbiotic relationship, and there is an ancient back and forth, living, trading, settlements, marriages, you know, births, culture, etc. So when the two states decide to start targeting each other, when there's a weakness in the relationship, it's these populations which are undocumented in the modern sense, owned, of course, traditionally on both sides, are the first victims of this. So,
okay, let me bring in Faiz in Kabul about this. Faiz, I mean, I was looking at the figures. Afghan refugees are the third largest displaced population in the world after Syrians and Ukrainians. Many of these people have fled many, many years ago. I mean, it's been more than 40 years of conflict in Afghanistan.
True. James, it's the recent expulsion of Afghan Majreen or Afghan refugees from Pakistan. It's directly connected to the Pakistan government and its establishment, political pressure on Taliban to divert their policies toward the support in the region for Pakistan. It's not only the call from Pakistan to ask Taliban to fight against TTP, but also economic results they want simultaneously, and also they want the regional affairs of Taliban to be under their wing or control. So Afghans have been there for more than four decades. Some of these Afghans, they claim, when they have returned to Kabul or Afghanistan, that they have all legal documentations They have their Afghan citizen cards. Some of them are having visas and all those legal documentation. But in spite of all the legal documentation, they have been deported within 24 hours in some of the areas. Secondly, many of these refugees who have been expelled from Pakistan to Afghanistan, they are not living in the close vicinity of the Durand Line. Large number of them are living in Punjab or in Karachi and Sindh, where the security situation is far more bitter than the Pashtun belt or the Durand Line vicinity, like Waziristan North and South. So all those claims that connecting or reconnecting the refugee expulsion from Pakistan to the TTP problem, I think those are not evidence-based and they are false and fake claims.
Okay, worth just a few things you mentioned there. TTP is the Pakistan Taliban. The Durand Line is the de facto border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, just so our viewers are aware. Devon, this started last year, did it not? Phase one of this. I'm told it was about 500,000 Afghans were repatriated. They were ones with no papers at all. As I understand it, now it's phase two, people who had been issued with something called an Afghan citizen card. So these are people that had documents to be in Pakistan, and it seems like Pakistan is now arbitrarily changing the validity of the passes it itself issued. It seems like it's hard luck. We've changed the rules. Would you agree?
Well, exactly. I mean, the Pakistan has not signed the International Refugee Convention, so they are a little bit different than other states, but they certainly have given Afghans legal paperwork. Like you said, the Afghan citizen card, which was issued to more than 800,000 people. So more than 800,000 Afghans that have been in Pakistan for many years have this legal right to stay in Pakistan, or so they thought, but now they are being deported or being asked to return. And of those 500,000 that returned last year, you know, some of them were deported, but many of them, you know, were forced to return in the sense that they were told, if you don't return yourselves, we are going to deport you. And as some of the other people have said, people were deported within 24 hours. So Afghans that were in Pakistan for a long time didn't want to be deported without any of their belongings or without any of their family members. So instead, some of them, you know, chose to leave. But we at Refugees International certainly think that that is compulsory, you know, that is being coerced, I would say, to leave rather than having it be a voluntary return to Afghanistan. So certainly, you know, Pakistan has given some legal rights to refugees and to Afghans, but not enough. And those 800,000 people with Afghan citizenship cards, like you said, are the next ones being, you know, targeted in this wave of deportations.
Niloufer, back to you. This first phase that took place at the end of last year was under an interim government because Pakistan had its elections, turned out to be pretty controversial elections. Now you have a new prime minister, Shehbaz Sharif, who's in office, and it's the new government that's instituting phase two. Is there debate on this in Pakistan? Is it controversial? I'm told there is a case at the Supreme Court.
We have something called the permanent powers in Pakistan. So the governments come and go, but certain foreign policy decisions remain in the unelected part, which is the permanent power, and certainly the Afghan
army.
Policy.
The army. You mean the army?
Exactly. So they make the decisions vis-a-vis, you know, our relationship with Afghanistan. And it really does not take into consideration what the sentiments as such are. But in this particular case, the sentiment of towards the Afghans, for example, amongst the Pashtun population in Pakistan will be very different to those in Punjab and Karachi. So like as one of the panelists from Kabul mentioned that, you know, they had been picked up Many Afghan refugees had been picked up from Punjab and in Sindh. Sindh in particular has a problem, you know, with the Pakhtun population, whether they are Afghan or whether they are Pakistani citizens. So it feeds into an existing xenophobia as well, and a fear of being a minority within their own cities and province, Sindh in particular. And in Punjab, anyway, they are so disconnected from anything outside of the Punjab that they pretty much follow the beeline of what the establishment happens to be thinking at that time. So I hope I've answered that question of yours.
Okay. So, let me bring in Devon now about the legality of this. As we hear, there's a case in the Pakistan Supreme Court, but under international law, is this legal? You mentioned earlier on the 1951 Refugee Convention. Pakistan is not a signatory to that. And I'm told the main principle of this is something called non-refoulement, which is the principle that a refugee should not be returned to a country where they face serious threats to their life or freedom. Does that apply to Pakistan?
Well, certainly non-refoulement is in a principle that applies to all states, whether they've signed the Refugee Convention or not. I mean, it's against the law to return people to places where they will potentially face torture, where their human rights will not be recognized. So certainly the principle itself is important, and it applies to Pakistan. Also, I think we need to be aware that, you know, this we're talking about this phase two of deportations, and this is for the Afghan citizenship card holders. But proof of registration card holders are the only legally recognized refugees in Pakistan. And while they have been told they are not part of this plan, they could be in the future. And certainly, we've also seen that even in this first phase of deportations, some people with proof of registration cards were deported as well. So police and Pakistani authorities don't necessarily always know the law. They're not, you know, it depends on where they are and who they are as to how they're going to implement.
Just to be clear, Devon, the proof of registration card, which is the one that is supposed to at least guarantee you the ability to stay there, that was jointly issued by the government of Pakistan and UNHCR, the UN agency. And I'm told you haven't been able to get one of those for 15 years. They've not issued them.
They issued them in 2007 was the last time they issued them. Now, they sometimes give proof of registration cards to children of people who have registration cards. But other than that, they have not issued new proof of registration cards to anyone who's been coming recently. So, for example, we were in Pakistan last year speaking to people who had fled since the Taliban took power and were at, you know, extreme risk, especially for their individual, you know, work or identities, and they cannot get a proof of registration card. So certainly anyone after 2021 has not been able to get them. But like you said, since 2007, they have not issued new ones.
Faiz, these people who are there in Pakistan, as you were saying earlier, many have lived there for decades. In fact, some of them have lived in Pakistan longer than they've lived in Afghanistan. In fact, it gets worse than that. Some of them were born in Pakistan and don't know Afghanistan at all.
Sure. That's very true. Unfortunately, Pakistan government, the interim, the previous, and also the current government, and then the army, they are doing all this to Afghans just to distract their the public opinion from the failures that they have had in the past few years, especially in political failures of the government that they couldn't the previous government to complete the term, and then toppling down Imran Khan and his government, and then having the election, the result of the election, as everybody knows, is not the way that the Pakistani nation and the people, they were assuming. There are reports of rigging and a lot of political controversies that has created the new government. So it's much more for domestic consumptions, just to distract public opinion, take away the public's resentment from the main failures of the government, the army within the country. They are blaming Afghans who have lived there, who have many of them have been given birth there. They have lived their life. They have contributed to the economy. They have contributed to the stability. But they are now blaming each and everyone for all the failures that the government have faced.
I've been reading through some of the reports from human rights organisations, Niloufer, like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. They say, as well as these deportations, there have been all sorts of hostility towards this community, including from the police. Police beatings, night raid, priests demanding bribes, confiscating jewellery, livestock, bulldozing homes. What do you make of those sort of reports?
Yes, it is unfortunate. I mean, I'm from a town called Pishin, which was a 50% would be Afghan refugees who have settled there forever. And when the deportations were happening, it was the largest internment camp. So the feedback that one was getting was exactly as we are saying, that in, you know, like in an undocumented landscape where it's securitized, it's very invisible, there's very little media coverage, the protests are not accounted for, the impact on the economy of the area by the removal of this Afghan population, which has been very much part and integrated into the political economy, whether documented economy or undocumented, but it certainly is part of the economy of there, of Balochistan and to some extent in KP, has had a dire impact as well. So yes, they have been, and there have been stories as well on, you know, the while deporting, you know, these illegal activities by the police and the deporting agencies. Yes.
And Faiz, one of the things I'm told is that the Pakistani authorities have limited how much money you can take out of Pakistan to 50,000 Pakistan rupees. That's about $175. So these people, many of whom had money and had businesses in some cases, are arriving in Afghanistan destitute. And as we've heard, very poor yes. economic situations in Pakistan, but it's worse on your side of the border, is it not?
That's very true. That's very panicking. When they return to Afghanistan, they return to a desert or to a country which is not recognized politically, which is under this economic sanction, which doesn't have a legitimate government yet, which is banning the government, the de facto authorities here, banning the girls' school, women participation. So they are facing like a nightmare. They are pushed to a border, to an area where they don't see any future. That's why many of these people, many of these Afghans, they have gotten refuge in Pakistan and Iran in the past 2.5 years, and millions of them have gotten refuge in past 3 or 4 decades of destruction, war, and catastrophe. So it's very much not been expected from a country, a neighboring country, which is established based on the call of Islam and Muslim unity, and a country which has given support to Afghans during occupation, during invasions, and being part of Afghanistan as a regional collaborator, a regional supporter. But in the past 2.5 years, Pakistan has been considered more as an enemy by these Afghans who have lived there for decades, who have invested their lives, their education, their minds and money in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Given that, Devon, and some of these, I think the figures I could find, about 600,000 arrived in the immediate aftermath of the Taliban takeover in August 2021. Some of these people are people like human rights defenders, like journalists, like people who worked for the United States, worked for NATO, people who were in the Afghan security forces. How worried are you about these people going back and the risks that they might face? I mean, are they returning, some of them, to a death sentence?
Well, yes, we're incredibly worried, which is why we think these deportations, and not to mention what the other panelists said about people having lived in Pakistan for decades and making their lives there, there are people that newly arrived to Pakistan that left Afghanistan because the Taliban took over and because they were individually targeted by the Taliban, and they will be upon return. So again, I mean, especially I would say women human rights defenders and female journalists and women that really stood up against the ideals of the Taliban. Well, the Taliban are now in charge and they are at great risk. They and even, you know, the women and girls more generally, I mean, they're going back to what the UN and others have called a gender apartheid state. So that is not, you know, we are worried about them for general reasons, but also certainly for specific reasons, like you said, because some of them were specifically working with the United States, with other Western allies, and working on ideals that are contrary to the Taliban and put them at great risk if they return. And we have no way to protect them. I mean, we have no way to help them really or protect them. And they get some assistance upon arrival. But after that, they're really on their own. And that's incredibly concerning.
Niloufer, on that issue of the women and girls, because some have said that women and girls now live most of their lives in Afghanistan under effective house arrest. These are Afghan women in Pakistan, who some of them had jobs. They're Afghan girls, some of them who were going to school or university. What's your reaction to their fate now?
Okay, before I answer that, I want to respond that, you know, the international community, which brought the Taliban to Afghanistan and supported it and pushed it, and Pakistan...
But Pakistan Pakistan was the Taliban's biggest supporter, was it not?
Pushed by the Americans, the Doha, alliance and negotiations pushed and lobbied by the Americans. And with the Afghan refugees in Pakistan, let's not forget that the Americans, bilaterals, UNHCR, has stopped funding the refugees while in Pakistan. So a Pakistan, which is under enormous economic spiraling down, as pointed out by our panelists as well, has started using the Afghans as the low-hanging fruit to...
Okay. But to go back to my point on... But go back to my point on the women and girls, though.
Of course.
I mean, you must be terrified, are you not, like the rest of the panel, about what might happen to these people?
Of course, absolutely. But then why did the international community support the Taliban coming into power? I mean, those of us who have been fighting for human rights and democracy and women's rights, both in Pakistan, were certainly not in support of the international community pushing the Taliban coming into Afghanistan. This
okay.
was inevitable.
I want to go back to Faiz at the end, because we've been talking all of this program about Pakistan, but there is another aspect to this. There are Afghans being deported, some from Turkey, but huge numbers from Iran as well.
You are very right, yes. But the deportation that is happening from Turkey or Iran, it's mainly the labor deportation. Like they don't deport en masse as Pakistan is doing with the families. One second, those deportations happen somehow in coordination with the de facto authorities here in Kabul. They do the paperwork, they do consider the legal process, and then bring them through legal channels like here and the border. But what happens in Pakistan, it's far more catastrophic and different, because they do mass deportation without considering the legal procedures and without taking the de facto authorities of Afghanistan into managing the returnees. A very small support has been provided through UNHCR and other agencies on the border, but what happens later on, there is nothing going on. Nobody knows what's going on.
Nothing going on. If you look at the international appeal for Afghanistan, $3 billion US dollars for 2024, it is currently only 7% funded. Thank you very much for our guests today for joining us, Niloufer Afridi-Kazi, Faisaland and Devon Cohn. This episode was produced by Mohammed Elaishi, Fintan Monaghan, Veronica Pedroza and Jimmy Getahan. Studio sound was by Yara Atullah. The programme was edited by Vishnu Sheila, Zainabada and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every single episode. Thanks for listening and tune in on Thursday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, as the world watches Israel and Iran and the war continues in Gaza, Palestinians in the West Bank live another dim reality. That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.